Hey, everybody, really great show to close out the week. This show was sponsored by Jenkins the Valet and Tally Labs for their upcoming drop, Azure Bala. We dive into that project in the second half. Before that, we talk about the accusations from OXB1 against Celsius, stating that Celsius is a Ponzi scheme. Celsius was a centralized platform for people to lend and earn interest on crypto assets, and the whole game is unraveling for them right now. Lawsuits, accusations. So we dive deep into that. We then talk about WAGMI United, the new soccer team DAO play that's dropping in the NFT space, as well as some other stories like the Mutant Ape Yacht Club recent run-up and the current state of the NFT market. As usual, all of our content is sponsored by FTX. You can sign up at thenifty.com/FTX or with the code thenifty on your FTX mobile app. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It's Friday. This is the NFT Morning Show. This show discusses all things NFT market, what trades are working, what trades are hurting, what's going up, what's going down, who's getting paid, and who's getting wrecked. I'm Pio. I'm here with my co-hosts Nifty Nick and Signal, some badass speakers on stage, Benjamin and Easy Eats Bodega, of course, Spencer Gordon Sand. And today's show is sponsored by Jenkins the Valet and specifically Azure Bala. So we got the squad, we got Thread Guy, we got Safa, we got Valet Jones. Really, really excited about today's show. If you retweet the tweet that's pinned to the top, you can be entered for a chance to win one of two NFTs that are given away on today's show. All you have to do is retweet that tweet that's pinned to the top and follow Azure Bala. We are going to be diving into that project later in the show. But before we go any further, Nifty Nick, what's going on?
What's going on? You didn't include who's running Ponzi schemes is one of the categories that you, that we're discussing. So that was something you missed out on there.
That is true. Redoing the intro. On this show, we talk about who's running Ponzi schemes.
We don't need to redo the whole thing. Okay. I also lost a bunch of my gains last night because I did an overnight trade and I set my stop loss low, which was unfortunate. But other than that, doing pretty well.
Well, so you've been active as hell with the Ethereum trading. So you gave back a little bit of, because I know you've been making gains. You've had actually a monster week.
Yes, the trade I said yesterday did materialize. It worked out. And then I think I gave back a large portion of this week's gains with one trade last night. Before going to bed, I was like, man, you don't want to do this before going to bed. It's not a good look. But I didn't want to miss out on potential upside. We keep like testing this one level. And I thought, you know, we finally made it over. The daily close or the daily chart had closed over the level that I was looking at. And I was like, we did it. Although actually now it looks like it didn't close over that level. So anywho, it was just bad all around. It was a bad move. But I mean, I live to, you know, see another day. It wasn't like the end of the world.
Yeah. I mean, you got a little overzealous. You were really feeling yourself.
I was like, yo, I'm the greatest trader ever. I made $500 this week.
I do feel like in the past few days, you have said that. You've said that to me. You're just like,
I didn't say I'm the greatest trader. Maybe I did.
I have the text message that says exactly that.
Okay, those may have been my words.
I mean, look, man, when you're hot.
Clearly
you're
not.
Hot.
Yeah.
You had the monster trade this week, the 12K profit trade, right?
No, that was not this week. That was like a couple weeks ago. So, I mean, overall, that's still up. I mean, that's all worked out. Just all my trades this week that I called, I think I offset in just one stupid trade. Just like that.
It's all good. Well, look, ladies and gentlemen, in case you haven't noticed, if you tune into this show, you can hear about Nick making monster trades and then gradually giving those profits back to the market.
The story of my life.
That's what we talk about when we're not talking about Ponzi schemes. The show happens Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. Eastern time. If you want to contribute to the conversation, request to speak. We will work you in throughout the show. Don't shill anything. Get the hell out of here if you're going to try to do that. And one more reminder before we go any further that today's show is sponsored by Jenkins the Valet and specifically Azure Bala. So make sure you retweet the tweet that's pinned to the top and follow Azure Bala on Twitter for a chance to win. We'll be diving deeper into that show, into that project later in the show. Signal, looks like Captain Kix is sleeping in. He's being a sleepyhead here. But how are you doing?
Hungry. I miss my lunch and I'm so annoyed.
Oh, man.
I know. I don't know where time's gone today. I've just been so busy and now my stomach's grumbling and it's 3 o'clock and I'm like, oh. Anyway, it's going to have to wait. Funnily enough, Nick's enthusiasm and listening to all this MACD jargon. Hey,
that's not me. That is not me.
The MACD is not me. Guy.
I know. It's actually really piqued my interest because I'm like, you know what? I'm going to give this a go, but I don't want to like lose or make real money, you know? So what I've decided to do is I'm going to do paper trading on crypto and just see, and just try and trade these, you know, BTC and ETH, see how it goes, get my fingers and hands dirty because it actually looks quite fun. But I don't want to put real money next to it yet. So I'm just going to reduce my risk, reduce any profit or losses and give it a try. So that's what I'm going to be doing over the next couple of days.
You're entering the dark side.
I am entering a dark side.
It's fun till you get a margin call email.
But the thing is, like, and I'm the same when I go to a casino or when I play poker or anything like that. I'm very happy to have small wins. I'm very happy to walk away from the table. And I've seen it when I go to the casinos with guys, like they win a bag and then they just keep going. And I'm like, dude, you're up 3-4 grand or however much. Let's go home. Let's go and spend that money tomorrow. And they just keep going. When I'm up, I'm happy with my gains. I walk away. I come back the next day. But I noticed that I trade differently. My risk tolerance is very different. So hence the paper trading.
I like the wait till she gets a paper trade margin call. That's going to be entertaining.
Anyway, my co-anchor, maybe he's been blown away or maybe he's gone to a good island with some sunshine.
Yeah, he's not here, but I'm excited, Signal, that we have a different version of Signal today. I knew we had, you know, Thread Guy, Safa, Valet Jones, and the Jenkins and Azure Bala squad, but I didn't know we were also going to have Hangry Signal. So, I mean, I don't know, like, is it typical? Are you waiting on your wine and cheese? Like, how does that work?
No. How it works is I sit here hungry for the next hour and I'll give you guys a great
That's where I'm at. I'm in the same place. I thought I had eggs in the fridge. I didn't. I didn't make them. That's a mistake.
Oh, well, we all know a hangry Nick is worse than me. Anyway, let's get into this.
Definitely. No question.
Let's get into this weather report. So today, end of the week, guys, it's Friday, the 8th of July. Volume is looking nice. We're back up to 19 million overnight. It's great. We're still in this range, but it's good to see we're on the upper end. The leaders, we've got apes at 95, mutants at 19, punks at 68. So they are creeping up slowly, while moonbirds, doodles, and clonex are still holding steady on their numbers. Overnight, apes are leading the open sea ranks. We're seeing the floor creeping up slowly, and a gold ape just sold for 670 ETH or $800,000. Our blocks announced that they're accepting payments in stablecoins. Their established curated collections are continuing to do well. Squiggles are now at 14 ETH. They were, I think, at 11 on Monday. And Gazers, that was at 9 ETH. That's also a curated collection that has a floor of 14 ETH. Art season continues. X-Copy collections are pumping. You've got Grifters sitting above Mutants at 20 ETH. Afterburn saw strong volume overnight. And Max Payne is slowly coming back up. It's still down in USD value, but now a 0.8 ETH floor. And the Possessed collection has revealed, but it's actually the killer bears that are grabbing the attention. The collection was bought by Seth Green and floor is back up to 1.8 ETH. Onto crypto, BTC is at 21.5K and ETH is at 1,225. So overall, crypto is having a relief rally and NFT volume is slowly coming back. However, the traders will tell you that these levels need to be confirmed before we get too excited. The leading project floors are also slowly moving back up, and seeing those rare sales, it feels like the markets are starting to cook and heat might be coming back. So this weekend, keep an eye on the markets. Interesting things could happen. The 24-hour forecast is skies are clearing. It's sunny. Back to you, folks.
Wonderful weather report signal. You know, there's a couple of there's one major story, right? I was going to say a couple of major stories, but let's be real. There's one major story.
No, there's actually like a bunch of major stories, I feel like.
Okay.
You're talking about Celsius. I don't know. Anyways, go ahead.
Well, no, I mean, yes, I was talking about Celsius. I was also like another story, I think, is the sudden influx of sales on Bored Ape Yacht Club and Mutant Ape Yacht Club, right? Because a lot of times when we see this sort of action, like with no news event, just out of the blue, like I think over 50 mutants sold during a 24-hour period, just kind of out of the blue. A lot of times it's in anticipation of some sort of announcement or news event, and the insiders are packing up their bags. But Nick, what other stories, you know, what major stories were you thinking about?
Well, I don't want to discuss all of them. You got an assassination, which is not up our alley. And then you also have the market tanking on the news. This isn't, it is relevant. You had an incredible jobs report, which made the market go down. Usually you'd get the inverse of that. But now I think that just increases inflation fears. Inflation is going to be here for longer. And so the market's tanking on that expectation. So that, yeah, I don't know. I mean, if you'd given that report a year ago, the market would have rallied like hell on it. Now we go the opposite way. So that's how that works. Nothing makes sense in this land. But yeah, that'd be the third thing. The Celsius one, obviously, being the biggest of the stories relevant to our show. And we did a space on that last night. I mean, that whole thing is absolutely bonkers.
Yeah, it's definitely worth discussing, and we'll dive into it. Spencer just raised his hand. Was that something on the jobs report, Spencer?
Something on the jobs report and a quick other point to you. Jobs report, I think the reason, like, I think it's actually good jobs reports tends to mean that the Fed feels better about the economy. And so there's less, like, they might hike the interest rates more because they think there's less chance that it's disastrous. Like, around Fed meetings, that you have to just think, like, everything is the inverse of what you might expect in terms of, like, numbers impacts, because the only number that people really care about is the Fed funds rate that they're setting. And so anything that would give them confidence in the economy, which would give them confidence in their ability to raise it without impact, is like negative. And then the other quick thing is that there was a pretty big artifact airdrop yesterday. For people who attended their in real life party, they got airdropped there was two NFTs that got airdropped, which totaled 2 ETH each, which felt like a lot because it's been a while since I just woke up and there was random extra money in my account.
Yeah. Holy shit. Dude, I think you're spot on with what you said about the jobs report and that people anticipate a rate hike. You know, if you had a, you know, bet money on it, Spencer, what do you think? One more rate hike?
Well, I mean, what? Here's the thing with the Fed, right? Is that we know there's a rate hike. And so it's not a question of if, yeah, but the degree of how much. And then really what people are looking at is forward guidance, right? So when the Fed sets decisions, like they've decided a while ago they don't want so much volatility. So they tell us what they think they're going to do in the next like several meetings, which is called forward guidance. And so really like the impactful thing is not what actually happens at this meeting. A little bit it is, like, because they give ranges, but like it's also more like what are they changing in their predictions of the future? Because like it's clear that through year end, I mean, they've said through year end, they're going to go to 3.25 and to 3.5% as the Fed funds rate. So like they're going to keep raising it, but the question is how much? And then do we have any like sense of insight? Is it like visible when they might stop raising interest rates and or lower them?
Yeah. And I mean, we got to watch their language carefully because they typically will kind of indicate what direction they're going to go in. Nick, it sounded like you had something to say on that. Did you want to contribute?
No, I'll never read one of those documents. I just look at the chart and then I make a decision based on that. But my general assessment here is, well, the market went down on that news. Back to you.
So, you know, we have to discuss the Ponzi situation with Celsius. You know, for people that don't know, Celsius was a centralized.
Does anybody not know?
I mean, well, maybe.
That's the possibility. Let's do it.
It totally is.
Uh-oh.
Easy. You're in robo mode, buddy.
Yeah, he's just fully rugged.
Want to give it another shot?
Right, maybe in a couple minutes.
He just died. Oh, yeah. So Celsius is a centralized platform that you could use to earn interest on your crypto assets or actually take out collateralized loans against your crypto assets. And there was some very, very big news yesterday where OXB1, who's been on this show before and has been a listener on this show before, is filing a lawsuit against them. I think Nick is the best person to give an understanding or a description of what ensued yesterday. Nick, could you take it away?
Yeah, I mean, he sued them. It's an interesting situation on a number of fronts. One, the OXB1 wallet, I did a tweet this morning. No one liked it, primarily because they think it's dumb. No, because if you actually, I went back and started looking at the wallet this morning because there were a couple of things. I looked at the wallet that had bought the M3 Mutant. Well, actually, let's just give a quick synopsis. OXB1 and his firm received hundreds of millions of dollars on a handshake deal with Celsius to start managing their money and producing returns. That in itself is absolutely ludicrous. Then, not having that agreement, he claims in this document, and this is where I don't know, and this is where I would be concerned about like potential liability from that front, is basically claims that he was communicating that they needed to take proper hedging measures as they invested in his positions, basically, or they funded his trading. The risk being in this case, let's say depositors had put Ethereum into Celsius, and then they took that Ethereum and sent it to OXB1, and then the OXB1 account was used to then trade that Ethereum, and the price of Ethereum went up, but they had marked it in US dollars on their books. What would happen on the liability standpoint, what would happen is on a USD basis, that liability would increase. And as we saw at the beginning of last year, the price of Ethereum rose in January and went on a epic bull run through much of last year, and or a large portion of last year. And so essentially at that point, what this lawsuit is saying is that they were now trying to cover what was losses that weren't even accounted for by taking out additional loans. They were also doing things where they were taking Celsius depositor monies to prop up their own token, the Cell token. And that token was a big portion of what provided yield to depositors. So they were using depositor money to buy up their own token, to inflate the value of the token, to inflate the yield that was being produced. There's a lot of stuff. And basically the short of it is it's bordering on it. Well, no, it's not bordering on. It sounds like criminal negligence in this case. And so who knows what ends up happening. But there's a lot of there's a lot of skin in the game here. And OXB1, I went and looked at his M3. So one of the claims that there's two comments that I've seen go around. The first thing is, why did OXB1, and in this case, Jason, they're saying, because it sounds like he ran the Twitter account, but not the actual firm that was managing the money. I mean, he runs it, but there's multiple people who have oversight over it. And so one of the questions that people have asked is, why didn't you say anything? We're now a year and a half out from when you started seeing this sort of stuff. Why haven't you said anything? And the defense to that, what I've seen is, well, he's owed millions and millions of dollars by that firm. So going out and talking shit about someone that owes you millions of dollars, just not good for business, basically. So that would be the defense in that scenario, potentially. The other thing that we saw where there was some ambiguity around was the OXB1 account trading NFTs? And the answer to that is yes. I went back and looked, and this is what drove my tweet that I posted, was that it was responsible for buying a lot of CryptoPunks. But more importantly, OXB1 or Jason had moved money out of the OXB1 account to multiple different wallets that I saw, one of which is the one that owns the M3 Mutant. And that wallet itself actually started with not a significant amount of ETH, like 30 ETH or something like that, which, I mean, to most people is a lot still, especially if ETH was at like 3,000 or whatever it was at, you know, $100,000 just transferring over. But what he did with that was bought a bunch of CryptoPunks. And that was in like January, February. So it ended up being a huge trade that actually produced a lot of proceeds for that wallet. I don't know if that was, and this is where the real question comes in. I don't know if that was compensation. And there's a lot of things which feel weird in how this is handled, is that how they're shuffling all the money in that one wallet to me is something which also is very questionable. I know within our own company, for example, we have like 10 plus wallets, and anytime that there's a new sort of purpose of what it's being used for, we first transfer money to that wallet so that it can be accounted for in a like on our books in a reasonable way, so we know what the purpose of that account is. Transferring money directly out of that to it messes up the accounting. It becomes really complicated. So that's the short of it. So there's a lot of like questionable things that were being done here. Handshake deals for hundreds of millions of dollars, money being shuffled around, the CEO supposedly and founder just taking advances against proceeds that they were generating on the trading account. There's a lot of just sketchy stuff that was going on there. And it just, I think, shines a light on sort of how the sausage is being made. Although in this case, it's more like the sausage is just being straight up eaten. Like not even, nothing's being created instead. But yeah, there was, that was kind of the synopsis of what was going on there.
Yeah, I know Micah G's opinionated on this. He was contributing to the conversation yesterday. Micah, you have your hand raised. Do you have some additional thoughts?
Well, just from late yesterday, the juicy thing that we brought up yesterday was in the filing that the Celsius CEO Mashinsky still had access to the same trading account and transferred out some of the NFTs that this buyer had bought on their behalf, transferred them out to his wife's wallet. And I noticed right. that 11 days ago that mega demon had got transferred to a different wallet. So
the mutant,
know.
You mean?
Yeah, the mega demon 11 days ago got transferred to like a fresh wallet. So I don't know if that's the guy like washing it or trying to get it to a safer place, or if that's the wife's wallet. Like, do we actually know if he still has access to it?
Or it being frozen. It would be another way of viewing that, is that it's going under to wallets that are under the control now of a bankruptcy proceeding, would be another way of viewing that. So I don't know. It's speculating on what those wallets are and how they're used to me is like my biggest concern is clearly we have a litigious group of people who were discussing at this point in time.
That's true. All right. All speculation. None of this is.
Yeah.
Not financial advice.
that would be my biggest concern about this is just I don't want to say something that's potentially libelous about any of these different people. But the bottom line is, it is clear, though, that there was a lot of sketchiness that was going on all fronts. And just the beginning, the foundation of a business relationship to happen on a handshake deal, just to me seems absolutely absurd. It doesn't, at least on that scale, unless, I mean, I'm guessing maybe they had done a bunch of business before and that was the source of where that trust was built, which gave them the willingness to go and do that. But it just felt like that's pretty insane. Regardless, it just gives a picture of the inner workings of some of these things of what were essentially businesses piggybacking off the success of the DeFi space by providing a centralized front to it and not doing a great job. And I think that's where a lot of these second tier exchanges have been operating. I think it's where a lot of the second and third tier, and I don't know how to even tier them and classify them, but yeah, that's the biggest takeaway, is that a lot of these people are doing incredibly sketchy things, and how the yield is being generated is interesting. Although a large portion of it, from what I could tell, was actually being used within DeFi in order to generate the yield. And there was a ton of proceeds that were generated, which is why they kept accruing more assets. And towards the peak, it sounded like there was over $2 billion of assets being managed by OXB1's firm. I keep blanking on the name, Finn something.
KeFi.
KeFi had now gotten up to a couple $1 billion in assets under management, which is a pretty large portion of Celsius's funds. I also saw a tweet, the last thing I'll say, from Based Carbon was quoted, and this guy, he's an entertaining account to follow, but a year ago he had posted a tweet where he essentially called out, I thought everyone knows that OXB1 is just the Celsius team, but no one else knew that, apparently.
Damn.
So that's pretty crazy. That was in July of last year.
That's early as fuck for that. That's crazy. And you talked about them actually making gains in DeFi, and you know, it's not like their market participation was nefarious, but it was known that they were getting blown up. Messing up DeFi plays, and everybody knows DeFi.
Wait, who was?
Celsius. Like, it was common knowledge that they were like getting blown up in DeFi plays, like just basically buying the wrong shit and getting rugged, right? Ben has his hand raised. What's going on, Ben?
Yeah, I wanted to comment on that handshake deal. Like, that's pretty fucking crazy that, you know, they do a deal without any kind of paperwork to manage billions of dollars worth of assets. And, you know, a lot of that, or essentially all of it, as is alleged, had no risk management behind it. Like, yeah. Celsius apparently was telling them that they were making counter trades, you know, just in case of fluctuations in the prices and the volatility that, you know, anyone in crypto understands.
That's a claim in this argument, right, though. So I actually, like, there may be some, like, are those documented? Like, are those statements documented?
I mean, it's pretty obvious that Celsius failed to implement basic risk management. So it's like, that's not really up for debate that they didn't do a good job managing their risk. But, you know, it's just crazy that, like, NFT Nick has better risk management by putting in a trade before he goes to sleep at night than people managing billions of dollars worth of, you know, customer funds, essentially.
Yeah, with a stop loss, I was going to say they're running this multi-billion dollar platform taking customer deposits, and they're literally running it like some, you know, NFT degen that's up until 4 a.m. smoking weed and drinking Red Bulls. Like, it's just kind of ridiculous.
Well, I think what's also crazy, so there was an agreement that was eventually put in place at some point post the initial allocation of 400 million or whatever the amount was, 200 million, I don't remember the exact amount. But the agreement was a profit sharing deal. So it wasn't even like a money management, it's not clear what it was. It was just here's how much you get out of these profits if you succeed. Nothing about like liability, risk management, or anything else like that. And it's also a weird deal, as Ben was just alluding to, where you I've never been in a situation, and maybe this is just because I didn't work in the right banking department at some like investment bank or hedge fund or something like that. But I've never been in a situation where you're now calling up the other person to like let them know the trades that you made today and that they need to hedge. Like, how inefficient.
No, it wasn't that, Nick. It was they had access to the trades, and so they can follow along.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
to make the counter trades. And
what a weird relationship, though.
Apparently, Celsius was like, you lost all this money. And they're like, you guys were watching us do this, and you did nothing to stop it, and you were supposed to. And
it's
such a clusterfuck.
But Spencer, I think it's really important to note the thing that, like, the comment is about, because it is actually, like, a common practice of, like, if you're going to, like, invest in a fund, for example, that, like, is long a certain type of exposure. So, like, an NFT fund, for example, is naturally long ETH exposure. There's no way around it. A lot of times, like, the investing party will hedge that exposure specifically because the fund itself shouldn't be the one hedging it to hold multiple types of assets. So, like, and I think this type of argument makes more sense in a fund that has multiple LPs. But, like, let's say you have one LP that thinks NFTs will do well as a percentage of the total market cap, like will do well on top of, like, ETH doing well, right? But they want to hedge the volatility of ETH, so their only goal would be to stack ETH, right? You can do that by taking a short that's of a certain size relative to the position you have.
Or to put option would have been the other thing just to do, which is what they actually wrote in that document. And I think the simple version of this was literally they sent them $200 million worth of ETH, and all they had to do was basically take out a put option or somehow find a way to get a put option at that particular price. A call option in this case. I forget which it was in this, how they, I get... Anyways, the bottom line is they would have to be able to, a call option to have the ability to buy back ETH at that lower price. So anyways, it would have been one trade that they had to do when they ended up handing the money over. But they didn't do that. The problem is your cost exposure for that. So or your risk essentially in that case is that now KeyFi underperforms, which they didn't in this case. It was an epic bull run that ended up happening, so they actually could have ended up making a bunch of money. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I just thought that the simple version is that all they needed to do was make one trade.
I mean, it's a gnarly situation to be in. It's a crazy story. Signal, you raise your hand. What's going on?
Yeah, no, the insight that I take away from this is just, like, how far people are willing to go down the risk curve in order to find yield. And I'm not saying that we're talking CeFi here. I'm not saying that there are not legitimate CeFis out there, like FTX is obviously one of them, but it's just, like, you have to look at who they're regulated by. So for me, I came across Celsius last year, and when I saw their rates, I was just like, what? Like, just anyone giving away high rates, I'm just like, this is a red flag. How are they actually making this money? I couldn't figure out how they're making this money. So then I just started to dig in, like, where are they regulated? Who regulates them? And I just couldn't get any clear answers. And so for me, that's just, like, a massive red flag. If an institution, for example, isn't regulated by the FCA, that's just huge red flags. And then you start thinking, okay, so who are they regulated by? Because if you can't do your due diligence, at least you can rely on the institutions who are paid to do their due diligence. So I would say, like, if you are looking at these firms as a possible place to be putting your savings, you at least need to do the research on who is actually auditing them and making sure they have the risk management processes in place. Because as an outsider, it's impossible to know that they're giving away your deposits to another entity who is then trading on them. So that would be my takeaway. If you're going to go this far down the risk curve, at least look at who is managing your money and who they're regulated by.
Yeah, I mean, Celsius always felt janky. BlockFi and Celsius kind of rose to prominence at the same time. BlockFi was backed by Winklevoss Capital, by Pomp Investments. There was a little bit more legitimacy to them. And then what a surprise, they're the ones that got bailed out by FTX, our sponsor. Not the sponsor of today's show. That's Jenkins the Valet and Azure Bala. So retweet the tweet that's pinned to the top and follow Azure Bala for a chance to win one of the NFTs that we're giving away today. We're going to dive into that project later in the show. We can chat a little bit more about this Celsius Ponzi scheme. We got some hands raised. I'm assuming that this is regarding Celsius. So one or two more passes of the ball, and then we are going to move on. We have a new speaker. We have Jeffrey Lebowski. The Big Lebowski on stage. He's a Proof XYZ member, and you claim to write slow stuff about fast crypto. Well, this is within 24 hours of this story breaking, so you better be writing pretty fast, buddy. What's going on, Jeffrey Lebowski?
Hey, how's it going? I appreciate you taking me up. So as a sort of humble student of history, kind of wanted to touch on some of the things Signal said, because I totally agree, and it just harkens so much, I think, back to the 2008 financial crisis and sort of the rise of shadow banking for crypto. And if we think about the basic business of banking as borrowing short-term from people who kind of like think their money is very safe, and then investing it in longer-term loans that have some risk, obviously that business is very dangerous, and therefore it's heavily regulated in the traditional finance space. But in the lead-up to 2008, like people in the financial industry found ways to like recreate, repackage those loans, obviously, so that they were less regulated and they could be very aggressive about leverage, liquidity, concentration, credit risk, all that kind of good stuff. And nobody realized how much of that there was and how dangerous it was, how interconnected it all was until it all went collapse. And I just think that it's so reminiscent of what just happened. Right, in that all this risk was packaged in the same ways, was very interconnected. And kind of like the lesson, I think, for a lot of individual folks should be that if you don't know where the liquid or if you don't know where the yield is coming from, you are the yield. So, just wanted to add
I like that.
Really love the show and appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah, there's another setting like that. If you don't understand what the product is, you are the product. But that's hilarious. If you don't know where the yield is coming from, when you deposit your money, that's the yield. You're just giving your money to somebody else's yield. That's hilarious. Renegade Master, you have your hand raised, and then we'll move on from this subject. What's going on?
Hi guys. Firstly, I dodged a bullet because I had a fair bit of USDC on Celsius. Like,
oh shit!
That I withdrew like maybe a month and a half before all this stuff went down. Woo! So thank God for that.
How long did the withdrawal take? Was it right away or did it take a few days?
No. So I essentially had stable coins spread out across multiple platforms being like Celsius, Nexo. I had a little bit on Anchor. So like I got wrecked with the UST Luna collapse. But Nexo, it was really smooth to withdraw. Celsius, they were making it really difficult. So I'm glad I got out when I did, because that would have been brutal. But speaking on what Benjamin was talking about, I thought it was interesting. Like, it'd be interesting to know what goes on behind the scenes. Like, this is a bit off topic, but relevant to kind of hedging. Like, with Yuga, when they sold the other side land in ApeCoin, they've obviously gotten destroyed in the USD value from their sales. But I was speaking to a few really smart people in the space who think that, like, essentially when they sold that land and Ape reached a certain price, that they entered a short position on ApeCoin, maybe covering 50% to 70%, or as much as they could on across a multitude of platforms on Ape to essentially like lock in that profit. And I wonder, like, I don't know how legal this is, but I wonder if like Celsius, you know, did anything like that when they knew the shit was hitting the fan, like if they entered like a massive Bitcoin short or anything like that. But I just think it's mind boggling to actually discover, you know, how irresponsible they've been. And I think like a lot of us now are just going to have trust issues and we'll never put our money into platforms like that.
Yeah. Do you guys think they do these huge trades from like their phone, like sitting on the toilet, just like, I'm just gonna do this $500 million Bitcoin leverage trade right now with customer funds?
I mean, it feels like that. It literally feels like
what's
that.
What's the dude in South America who's buying the Bitcoin? Because he's posted him buying it from a cell phone, which is funny as hell.
Which guy? The third richest guy in Mexico, Uncle Rico?
Or El Salvador president?
The president of El Salvador?
Oh, fuck yeah.
Nayib Bukele.
From his cell phone just aping Bitcoin. Straight and fucking amazing.
He's just like walking around the block in his step-in shoes, trying to like get into the new move to earn Ponzi. He's like, I might as well just leverage some Bitcoin here.
Yeah, because he's a fucking badass. Shout out Nayib Bukele in El Salvador.
You're like, yeah, that is a good idea for him to use his cell phone and trade on the toilet.
Yeah, literal world changer going down in Central America. Shout out Nayib Bukele. But more importantly, shout out Jenkins the Valet and specifically Azure Bala for sponsoring today's show. If you haven't already, retweet the damn tweet that's pinned to the top and follow Azure Bala for a chance to win one of the NFTs that we're giving away. We're going to dive into that project later in the show. This show happens Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. Eastern. We're moving on from the Ponzi scheme talk, as fun as it is to talk about, and I can't wait until we get subpoenaed for the content that we have released on this matter. There's clearly some pit bull lawyers out there, ladies and gentlemen, and they're going for us. But you know, speaking of like shit posting like that, like Nayib Bukele does, we have a fucking, you know, world championship poster on stage, Thread Guy, and also a mutant ape holder. And we've seen some action in mutant apes. It's funny, you know, when there was a pump before the bear market was here, when we were peak bull, a pump would literally get you from like, you know, 16 ETH floor to like 28 ETH floor in a 24 to 36 hour period. Like we saw that so many times. Now a pump gets you from 17 ETH to 19 ETH. So it's a different game we're playing now. But I mean, I guess no one knows what exactly is going on right now, or I guess some people might, the insiders, and why there's a sudden run on some of these Bored Ape Yacht Club assets. Thread Guy, if this mutant ape runs, are you going to sell into that pump? Or at this point, are you too deeply branded with your mutant ape and it actually doesn't make sense for you to sell it?
First of all, I just want to say, looking at floor prices here, I know we technically pumped. It does not feel like a pump. Like you said, you know, I'm waiting.
It's not worth $100,000.
It's worth like a fifth of that. But no, I mean, at this point, like I definitely have had some sell price targets in the past. And I told myself, you know, if it hits 50K, 75K, whatever, I'll sell. But, you know, I looked at my screen to like 120K floor and just did not sell. So I'm going to say at this point, at least for the next 6 months to a year, like I have no intentions of selling this PFP. As much as it hurts me to turn down six figures at the top, I just don't see how I can do
You're
it.
You're lying to yourself. I give it 1 month before you have a Solana NFT.
Hey, I actually, believe it or not, like I got to keep the Phantom Wallet docs because it's so horrid what's in there. But there are a couple Solana NFTs that I own. And I actually purchased.
That's what I'm talking about. Joining the dark side with Easy Eats Bodega. Look who decided to show up. Captain Kicks sleeping in on a summer Friday. Must have had a thirsty Thursday last night or something like that. Kixy boy, how are you?
Very good, very good. It's actually a lot less cool sounding. It's a single dad life. Yeah, I'm doing great. I'm chewing Nicorette gum these days, so a lot healthier and still feel energetic. So that's going great for me. I definitely dumped a shit ton of money into crypto last night, so we'll see how that works out.
Trading that MACD again. What happened? You got to play an intro for him now where it's some sort of MACD reference here.
The MACD man.
There you go.
Yeah, so I put some more money into the good old crypto yesterday.
What time?
I was just slamming the buy button every like 30 minutes from like.
It sounds like a really sophisticated approach. We're playing this is Kix's theme song now. It's just Mac Dre for the MACD trading that he's doing. The title of the song is Get Stupid, and it sounds pretty appropriate for what you're doing. So wait, you're buying ETH or what are you buying? Solana? Like, I doubt you're buying Bitcoin.
I bought one Bitcoin, one whole coin, and I bought a lot of Matic.
Okay, so you have deep conviction in Matic because you are building one of the more successful crypto games, Crypto Raiders, on Matic. What about Solana? Are you touching Solana?
Yeah, no, I own a bag of Solana too. I bought a couple salamis yesterday. but like I already had some money in Solana. I didn't really have much money in Matic, so that's why I bought some of it yesterday. I was just thinking with Matic, man, just because of the amount of like, you know, serious partnerships that they keep getting, that they're set up. I know they're not a true layer two. Someone smarter than me will explain exactly what they are, but I mean, they're super synergistic with ETH mainnet, which is why I think that, you know, partially why I think that they're landing a lot of these deals as opposed to maybe like AVAX and Solana. There's just a lot of positive headwinds. And just when I'm looking at the space and like on a 5-year horizon, it's like, okay, Polygon's at $4.5 billion. Like, is this chain with, you know, Facebook getting on it and Reddit just, you know, decided to do their NFTs on there. Zed Run's launching their coin there. A lot of momentum going Polygon's way. Like, is it possible that this chain is worth $10 billion in 5 years? And I 2x my money. I'm like, yeah, probably no brainer. So threw a little bit in there, added a little bit to ETH, with the expectation that, you know, we may pull back a little bit here, because we're kind of hitting the same top of the range that we hit on Sunday. I feel pretty decent at just buying at these levels. I'm still like very heavily cash. So if it goes down another, you know, 50% from here, which I don't even know if that's going to happen, I'll just buy some more. But I don't know. I'm feeling kind of good about just the general markets, like everywhere. Inflation's high. Yeah, inflation may be persistent. Yeah, the Fed's doing some quantitative tightening or whatever like that. But then, you know, just literally pull up the chart on Ethereum. You know, you're buying literally like at two and a half year lows. You're buying at like the bottom of this cycle. So like, if you actually believe in Ethereum, like, you know, do you not think it's going to go back up above $2,000? And, you know, Nick's good at trading the lines on the charts. I'm just not good at that at the end of the day. So I'm just like, okay, this is a point where I should start, you know, deploying some capital. Goes down further, whatever. But because if you just look at the overall economy, I mean, I think the Russian-Ukraine war, I think Ukraine's kind of losing that one a little bit. So I think that may get wrapped up here pretty soon.
Jesus. Continue.
Sorry,
continue.
I haven't had my morning coffee yet. I mean, sorry. I'm
not transition like, that was.
Yeah.
So I think we're about to wrap that one up. Just take over that country.
Turning and, the page on that one there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just move on to buying ETH.
Hey, sometimes you take an L. I mean, they're not losing their whole country. They'll probably just lose a third of it, which, I mean, sucks. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, that those tensions may be, you know, resolving a little bit. And job reports came in still pretty strong. I don't know. We're in a funky economy. I just remember, like, every time there's, like, a crash, you know what I mean? People always set the prices, like, super fucking low. Like, remember in June when we crashed, like, 1,600? Everyone's like, ETH going to 800, ETH going to 800. Eventually we did, but we went to 4,500 first. You know what I mean? I mean, these are just pretty good prices. So yeah, bought a bunch of that. I was looking over. I was kind of mad I didn't buy a Moonbird cheaper. I like the Moonbirds. But my biggest concern with NFTs right now is that, like, if ETH does, you know, start to make, you know, some price movement up, do the NFTs hold their price in ETH, or do they like reprice down in ETH and hold their USDC value? That's going to be a really interesting thing to see what happens, because that can make a big difference in terms of how NFTs do if ETH goes up. But yeah, probably should have bought half of what I bought yesterday, but oh well.
Well, one quick question, then we'll move on. So you were nibbling every day, you were dollar cost averaging, but then obviously you said that you made a big bet yesterday. Was that purely impatience, or was there some sort of...
That was MACD. That was the Discord saying, yeah, MACD! MACD!
It had to be impatience and impulse, or was it an actual like technical decision?
It was more so that I just wanted to, because I'd only added a little bit to like Ethereum and a little bit to Solana.
It was more so just because I wanted to get the bag of Polygon that I had up quickly. And like from here on out, I'll go back to like the dollar cost averaging. But I basically just bought a lot of Matic to get my, to get it to like the right percentage of my portfolio, if that makes sense.
Okay. Yeah, totally understand. So on stage, we, with their hand raised, we have Ali Sharafi. You are an NFT collector, but you're saying that you're a hybrid art and PFP degen. We spoke on the phone last week, and I see that you are in our Discord now. So you now are a portal holder. Shout out to you. But what's going on, Ali?
Hi, Pio, Nick, Signal, Easy, everyone. First of all, kudos to you guys for that portal, man. What you built there is really awesome. That server is on fire.
But thanks, man.
Thank you. But I wanted to say, I'm like talking to at least 5-6 project founders each day. And most of them are like holding their prices to be announced because they are like fearing the 28th of this month, that they fear that we're going to see a huge dip and it's going to affect their project and stuff. So everybody's holding for that and see how it goes with the inflation rate and all these reports coming out. First, I want to know your thoughts on that. And the second one, I would love to hear your thoughts on WAGMI United Mint.
WAGMI United, man. We talked about that the other day. Look, I think that what Kick said about the NFTs repricing in US dollars, I think that's the camp that I'm in for now, because I think that this 80% drawdown sobered a lot of people up, and we were objectively speaking in like a year long plus speculative mania cycle with NFTs. I think that you're going to see the fine art NFTs lead the way when it comes to like having these totally inflated, unreasonable valuations. And once we see that, I think you'll start to see other NFT projects, the more like quote unquote startup projects, kind of catch fire again and have these like totally inflated valuations. I think there will be isolated wins. You know, you got a Moonbird. Captain Kicks just talked about how annoyed he is that he didn't buy a Moonbird. I wouldn't be surprised if you get some isolated winners like Kevin Rose, really inspiring confidence in the market and getting like a further pump on something like a Moonbird. But those are my thoughts on WAGMI United. I'm going to be really curious to see how it performs, like if it's an insta sellout, if there is secondary volume right away. But I don't know if anybody else has any thoughts on this. Like Micah G, you've had your hand raised for a minute. Any thoughts on what we're talking about now, or is there something else you wanted to discuss?
I mean, originally I was going to talk a little bit more about the Reddit NFTs that I'd looked into, but I'm also looking at WAGMI United a little bit just because I like the idea of just following the team. But as a day trader investment, I don't totally see how that goes way up in price. So it's an interesting idea if you have money to float around and you like watching soccer teams in the fourth division of the Europe League. But I'm not sure as a day trader trying to make money, I don't totally see why you would invest in that. They're not even changing the jersey. Like, it's still Crawley Town. They'll get you like a fake jersey of WAGMI United, but it's, they're not rebranding the team. So I think that like the level of control versus people that live in actual Crawley area, whatever part of England it is, like you're not actually getting control of the team. So I think that's one thing, is like they're almost trying to like separate and quarantine off the NFT investors from the actual team. Like if you look at Crawley Town's Twitter, they don't have anything about WAGMI United. So it really feels like a fundraiser that they're doing in secret while trying to quarantine off the actual team. So just be aware of that when you're investing, that, you know, it's not quite as involved as you might want it to be. But the Reddit NFT was another one that I looked into that I thought was fascinating, which is they're launching on Polygon, but much like with the WAGMI United thing, they were making a point not to say NFT, and they were like almost trying to like quarantine off the idea of it being an NFT from their you know, the Reddit user base. So it was kind of a weird, tepid entry into the ecosystem, but they're available to buy right now. And I don't think that was super clear to a lot of people, but I got all the way to the screen where you could buy these avatars, like from artists in the Reddit ecosystem. I got all the way to the checkout page, and then I noticed that the edition sizes had a plus on them. So as in, like, they weren't even guaranteeing that they would only have, you know, edition sizes of, say, 100 or 200 or 1,000. It would say 100 plus, which from my NBA Top Shot days was an immediate disqualification from buying.
They're dropping a lot more.
Yeah, so it's a really interesting entry, and they're doing it on Polygon. Like, they picked a main, you know, main area to drop, but they're like, I don't know, they just feel tepid about it. Like, they're dipping their toe in, but they don't want to, like, they don't want to pressure people into buying it. They don't want to advertise a bunch. So it's an interesting entry. I don't know if anyone else looked into it.
Matic is also an interesting one. Didn't their first NFT was on Ethereum, right?
Yeah, it was really expensive too, right?
Yeah. Well, the people who ended up getting it ended up making a bunch of money, I recall. But the I asked something yesterday. I was like, are there any Matic NFTs that have actually performed well? And I mean, to be fair, Crypto Raiders, which Captain Kicks has, I made money on that, but that was actually still when it was on Ethereum. And I don't know, are any of those assets still on ETH? I don't even know at this point. Or 100% of it transferred to Matic
Yeah, that's all Polygon.
But there were a couple of responses I saw where there were examples of NFTs that, like, the measurement was like, well, it's still above mint price. But there just hasn't been like a breakout NFT on Matic, and which comes back to the thing that we've always said, which is, well, the number one utility that people are looking for is price appreciation. And that's where a lot of the action in the market has been. So, like, I mean, that's ultimately the name of the game. And if you're able to, you know, make money on trading NFTs or collecting the NFTs, then you like a lot more. Like, suddenly it's like, the X copies that are doing right now, the grifters, well, those weren't going anywhere, and now they're going somewhere, and everyone's like, "Yeah, grifters, they're the greatest." I'm not saying that they're not great. X copy has a bunch of great stuff, and maybe these are like the, but the reason that you want it now is because the price went up, and maybe the price goes up further, and so that's where, like, I think a lot of people spend less time focusing on that aspect of things and instead are like, well, we're really good at narrative development and all these other different things, which matter. But the number one thing I feel like is the tokenomics aspect of things, which many are missing.
Yeah, I think you're, you know, spot on with that take. Like, Sandbox launched on Ethereum, obviously. So you can't say that, like, they're like that, the success of Sandbox, but they're on Polygon now. And so, like, that's, you know, clearly the number one project on Polygon. But I think that, like, when it got on Polygon, Sandbox is at 1.5 and it's gone to a 2.14. So, I mean, there's definitely Yeah.
So my Sandbox land that I own now is actually on Polygon, or I have to migrate it.
I think it's like it's a little bit weird. I think it's kind of like hybridized.
Yeah,
because you can.
Okay, sorry.
I was going to say, you can just see on the activity, you can see when it is bought on Matic or when it's bought on mainnet. So still a lot of the volume is on mainnet right now for it. I think the thing is, like, your analysis or thesis is spot on, meaning that like, ETH has been this, like, great value holder, especially of, like, you know, higher end things. I think when you look into the future and you kind of see what's happening on Solana, and you project into the future, like, in order for NFTs to work at scale, you need to be on a scalable chain. And so I think it's, if you look at it in the current now, your analysis is spot on. It's like, why spend, like, I don't spend much time trading at all on Polygon. I'm more so just betting on the Polygon, like, network, because since it's so much cheaper, a lot of these businesses are probably going to like, you know, build their ecosystems on there because it's, you know, more scalable and more affordable. But yeah, there's no Bored Ape Yacht Club, and there's nothing going on it like Solana either. You know, there's no Solana monkey business. There's nothing like that. Like, the the NFT community on Polygon is not nowhere near developed as those two. But I guess the question is, you know, 2 years from now, what does it look like?
Yeah, and I saw Valley Jones had his hand raised. Was there something you wanted to chime in on here?
I was going to chime in on Wagme United.
Absolutely.
Before I go anywhere, though, PO and Nick and Signal and Easy, I want to share something the Thread guy texted me and Safa at the beginning of the show, which is that Riding Dirty at 9 a.m. is a game changer. I'm changing my alarm clock to get me up with that from now on.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. I tried to pick car songs because it's Jenkins the Valet, you know?
Yep.
Jesus, P.O.
that was awesome. But yeah, I mean, I should say, first of all, full disclosure, I don't know anything about soccer. Not a soccer fan. Like, you got to drag me to a bar to watch a soccer game. I do think it's super cool, though, what they're doing. I think that, like, in a bear market for folks who have, like, a really long-term outlook, what you want to see is folks using NFTs to, like, do something new. And no question, like, what they're doing is new, and who knows if it'll work or not, but I think, like, the whole space will be better for someone having tried it. But I forget who was making the point earlier about like, if it's interesting for day traders or not. I have no idea if a fourth division soccer team has like ever made it to the Premier League. Probably not. The way I think about what they're doing and the utility that they're bringing to the project and to like the NFT holders is that I don't know. It's like some tickets to games, some like live streams from the bench, stuff like that. That stuff. There's like a couple step functions like as the team develops, where like you get to the next league and all of a sudden that's more interesting. Like, I want to watch the better teams. And, like, ultimately, you know, I want to see, like, the team, you know, compete in the Premier League or something like that. And so I suppose if you want to make some money on that NFT, you got to have the belief that, like, there's enough hype coming into this project that, like, players will want to join the team will win, and that as, like, the fan base grows or something, more people, like, want this, like, exclusive asset that, like, gives you some relationship to the team. But I sort of think of it more as like a super cool experiment that like I'm happy is happening in the space, but like I don't really think that like I don't know, the next like Cristiano Ronaldo is going to end up playing for Crawley.
Yeah.
Yeah, let me just respond, cuz that was me that was saying that from a day trading perspective, I would say if you're trying to make money out of this project, if you just took your $350 and you bet on Crawley to get promoted to Division One, and then the next season to get promoted to the Championship, and then the next season to get promoted to the Premier League, you would be a millionaire. So rather than putting that $350 into an NFT that you hope to sell for more later, just put a parlay bet on those three things happening, and you're way better off.
I'm obsessed with that. That's a brilliant move. I love that.
Just buy crypto with leverage.
It's a D-gen move for sure. Yeah, exactly. I'm not sure. I think I probably figured something else out to do with $350. But the point, Micah, is super well taken. It's there are a lot of different ways to look at like a bet that a bunch of like D-gens can run a soccer team and make it something that's fun.
100%. And yeah, I mean, once we get into that kind of direction, you might as well just do a sports bet. We're going to throw to Renegade Masteries. He has his hand raised. And then we are going to dive into today's sponsored by Jenkins the Valet and specifically Azure Bala. Retweet the tweet that's pinned to the top. There's more people in this show right now in the audience than there are retweets. Get your ass retweeting it. Follow Azure Bala and you will have a chance to win one of two NFTs that were given away today. Nick, you unmuted. Something to add?
I mean, just how much does it cost you to click a little button?
Yeah, just click a little button.
Just click the little button.
Come on.
Retweet. Just click it. You don't even need to quote it. You don't need to provide your insight on that tweet. People understand it. They get it. They see the tweet and they understand it. So you didn't even need to like write anything. Imagine if you had to write an essay about your analysis, about the future of crypto, all as a result of just retweeting that tweet pinned at the top. But you don't have to do that. This isn't a class. You're not getting graded. So just click the button.
We could have had you do all that shit and we spared you that action. So you should be thanking us as you retweet it.
Oh, thank you for not having us write a thesis statement on the state of NFTs in order to be entered in this giveaway. Thank you for that. You're welcome. Mm-hmm.
I mean, Thread Guy went with actually begging in the comments, but I don't think that that improves his chances.
Did Thread Guy get rugged? Where'd he go? What's going on here? I think he might have literally gotten rugged. Gotta love Twitter.
He's
love
now
Twitter.
Begging on another account.
Gotta love you. All right, Renegade Master, let's knock you out, and then we're diving into the sponsor. Go ahead.
Knock him out right in the face.
Knock him out.
Well, firstly, I retweeted the tweet, so thank you for making that straight forwards. But yeah, I just think it's been really interesting to see like the fine art market really pump over the last few days. And funny, Nick mentioned grifters because I actually picked one up yesterday. And my grifter story is similar to Nick's Chromie Squiggle story. And like I'd been watching them for a few months and they're hovering around, you know, 7 to 9 ETH. And I ended up like buying one yesterday for 15 just because I felt like in US dollar terms, they were still, you know, 50-60% from their high. So like I bought my grifter for 15 ETH. The person who sold it to me bought it for 6.4 ETH or something 6 months ago, but I paid 33% less in USD value than he did, which is just wild. Yeah, like I do think Nick makes a good point in terms of, you know, the number one utility people are looking for is like for the price to go up. I think with the art stuff, there is a layer of, I'm not sure if you would call safety around it compared to the speculative stuff, like buying something that's reliant on like execution of an airdrop or, you know, whatever that may be. But this is also why I struggle to hold anything, because I purchased that grifter with my ETH bag that I bought in the three digits, and now ETH has run up to 1200 and I've got an offer in my DMs of, you know, like 7 to 8 ETH more than what I paid for it literally like 24 to 48 hours ago. So a part of me is like, oh, do I take this and cash it in because it's a juicy gain? But yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see how the fine art stuff holds up in ETH value as well, if we do get another uptick in the value of Ethereum like Kix was talking about.
That's going to be the massive question on the way up. The question on the way down was, are these things worth anything? On the way up, we're going to figure out, you know, if they hold that ETH value. All right, ladies and gentlemen, retweet the tweet that's pinned to the top. We're diving into our sponsored spot here, Jenkins the Valet, specifically Azure Bala. Really excited to do this one today. Jenkins is one of the coolest projects, in my opinion. I was paying attention to it early on because you guys were one of the first, if not the first, to kind of build like a proper business around Bored Ape IP. Am I wrong about that? Like, were you literally the first ones to do that?
Thank you. I don't know, Safa, I think we probably were.
Pio's words, not ours.
there were a bunch at that time. I had done an interview with Jenkins last year, though, and we did the we discovered it. That was really early on, and it was just getting started, but probably one of the most successful examples. I also think, you know, you had spotty Wi-Fi
for sure,
trying to like building a brand around it. I don't know about a business.
Here's what I'll say. When we were starting and going hard, Thread Guy's PFP was still a G-Vol.
He was still a lad. So, you know, you guys have obviously come a long way. You brought Neil Strauss on board. I know Neil couldn't make it today, but that, like, for people that don't know, like, Neil is a several times over best-selling author. I mean, the way, when you kind of look at his track record, it's like the guy just rolls out of bed and writes a bestseller. And I don't think a lot of people in the NFT market kind of process the power of something like that and having him on board with a project like this. Could you give everyone just kind of a high-level understanding of, like, you know, where is the Jenkins, the Valet, and Tally Labs ecosystem at right now? What is Azure Bala? What is this drop? We'd love to know.
Yeah. And maybe just to like set the table a little bit for some background, Jenkins, the Valet is Ape, Bored Ape 1798. We purchased that Ape off of the secondary market in May of 2021. And at the time, Safa and I, who were childhood best friends, we're in the space through Top Shot. We're big basketball fans. When Wagme United moves into, you know, basketball ownership, I hope they call me.
Buying the Harlem Globetrotters and saying they're going to make it to the NBA, right?
Yeah, probably the Washington Generals. But they we were, you know, big into Top Shot, and at the time started seeing that a lot of folks were using CryptoPunks and other avatars as their own profile pictures. But it would be like, you know, me with my first name and last name, like on Twitter with an NFT avatar. And 100%, you know, Spotty Wi-Fi was like crazy early, right? He's one of the first people to use an NFT avatar and create like a pseudonym and like a real character around it. And when Bored Apes came out, Yuga Labs like really changed the game, and they deserve, you know, so much credit for, you know, well beyond what we're doing. But I think what so many projects are doing are inspired by Yuga. The art was a little bit higher fidelity. The commercial rights were sort of inspiring, because even though I think at the time we didn't imagine creating a whole business around Jenkins the Valet, it led you to believe, or to at least imagine, hey, I own this asset. I can do whatever I want with it. I can monetize it. I can build a brand. I can do all those things. And we became inspired to like build a character, basically to create an account for the NFT, but not have it be us, have it be like its own thing. My background is creative writing, and then I've spent most of the last decade in software and product management, and Safa comes from, you know, brand building, creative strategy, things like that, had exited an agency. And so we felt like NFTs were like exactly like right in the middle of all of that. And we started writing as Jenkins the Valet. And what we learned along the way was that like people, this idea that like a character can be born on the blockchain, and that we all own these like assets and we own the rights to them now, like based off of, you know, this Yuga model, and people like doing it, and people like the Jenkins stories, and they like to add to them, and they like to contribute to them, and they like to do all of these things. And based off of that, we had this opportunity to pull the community in and like continue to write stories together. We were doing that on Twitter. And then eventually we launched our own project. And I think, you know, Nick, that's when we were speaking last year, we launched something called the Writers Room, where folks could join us and they could actually work with like elite creatives to tell stories that would be like born on the blockchain. And so Neil Strauss, who's a 10X New York Times bestseller, is writing our first book, which is launching and has a public sale next Monday on July 11th, that features 4,075 Bored Apes and Mutant Apes that were licensed from the community to us. So that's like a little bit of background on Jenkins the Valet and where we came from. Jenkins is going to ultimately go on a journey like to Azurbala, which is a world that we're creating. But I'll stop there, and you know, Safa and TG can add to it and can talk a bit about Azurbala as well.
Amazing. I think one thing that's like been super clear is that communities love to they love to go on journeys, right? And so one thing that's always been really important to us is we take our community along with us in everything we do, and sort of the business evolution of what we're doing is like a bit of a story in itself. And so what we mean by that is you're following this along through the eyes of Jenkins the Valet. So you know that Jenkins is the valet at the Bored Ape Yacht Club, but from there there's going to be, you know, various things that happen in this narrative that eventually cause him to leave. Jenkins has discovered a new world called Azurbala. It's the jungle capital on the other side of the metaverse. And our community is going along for the ride with us. They're discovering it alongside Jenkins. And it's a new world sort of that we're launching. And super excited to sort of have folks, you know, explore it. And I think one thing that's exciting for us is we've been a character in someone else's world for a really long time. And that's been phenomenal. There's no Jenkins without Yuga Labs. But I think, you know, for us, we have a really interesting perspective in that, because, you know, we know exactly what we like to see from projects to enable individual characters to grow and to tell their story, because, you know, we did it outside, you know, coming outside of the Bored Ape Yacht Club. And so everything that we do with Azurbala from a, you know, PFP collection standpoint is with the goal of how do we create more Jenkinses? How do we allow other individuals who have a passion for storytelling, a passion for building their characters to allow them to grow, right? And to really live the story and interact with it in a more immersive way. And so that's the lens that we're looking through. And we released Osdorballa.com, which for those of you who are in the audience would absolutely love for you to check it out. We think it's higher fidelity and with richer lore and more depth to it than really, you know, any project that is launched. Check it out on desktop with sound on. But a huge shout out to Emma Needell. You mentioned, you know, Neil Strauss. Every project that we've brought to market, our goal has been to put like world-class creators and to pair them up with our community. We did it with Neil. We're doing it with Salt Audio for the Jenkins Audio experience. And Emma is an incredible screenwriter who has joined our team as head of story. And she built this Osdorballa world, everything from the scarce resource that governs it to the religion, to the gods, to the societal norms, to the customs. Like, there's no stone that's been left unturned. And we've created like a fully sort of robust, you know, world for people to explore. And we're excited to welcome everyone in.
So yeah, this...
I'm on the site now. It's really fucking cool. I feel like I'm in Avatar's world or whatever. Like, I just want to go, like, you know, swinging through the trees over here. It's pretty cool. But go ahead, Nick. Sorry.
I was gonna say, so what's the dynamic with Jenkins Valley? Like, how is this structured when you're talking about this? Like, is this a spinoff? Like, what is this the first journey of Jenkins? Like, what is that actual structure? Yeah. And then also, more importantly, I want to be clear, like, is there a mint upcoming, and how does that factor into all of this?
Yeah, for sure. There, Osdorballa is a separate property, you know, also like created by Tally Labs, our company, and, you know, the parent company of Jenkins the Valet. However, you know, we try to like shoot story through everything that we do, right? And so the way that Osdorballa comes to market and the way that, you know, our community will come to better understand what Osdorballa is all about, and eventually, you know, own Azurians who are their own characters and their own rights, will be through the eyes of Jenkins. If you follow Jenkins the Valet on Twitter, you may have seen that over the last couple of weeks, he's actually been invited to Osdorballa. Lady Vo, who is, you know, the matriarch of one of the factions in Osdorballa, has learned that Jenkins the Valet is writing a tell-all with 10-time New York Times bestseller Neil Strauss about his time at the Yacht Club.
Because Osdorballa was impressed by Neil Strauss.
Exactly.
They read the game.
There's a lot of pickup artists in Osdorballa now.
they've become incredibly impressed. And so they've invited Jenkins the Valet to come write their story. Lady Vo has invited him to write the story of House Calypso. And so Jenkins, you know, who's I won't spoil the end of Bored and Dangerous, but I guess I'll say this: Jenkins doesn't fail. You know, is making a journey to Osdorballa, where he will come to learn all of the things that exist there, and the community, you know, alongside of him will see those things as well. But like Safa mentioned, you know, we've got some other projects in the works right now, and you know, one big one is a podcast that we're also doing this summer with a number of other NFT communities. And so Jenkins, you know, won't stay in Osdorballa forever. That's not his home. That's not where he lives. He's a valet at the Bored Ape Yacht Club. And so, you know, eventually he will go home, but Osdorballa, of course, stays and you know, is a place on its own. And so Jenkins, you know, is a character who navigates the metaverse, and occasionally, you know, finds something new, which is an opportunity for like a new collection, you know, or a new franchise to come to market. We do have a mint coming up, which is July 11th. So there's a public sale starting on July 11th, which is next Monday, of Jenkins's book, Bored and Dangerous, the one with Neil. And then that Bored and Dangerous book ends up being sort of your key to get to Osdorballa through some game theory that involves burning the book and eventually, you know, ending up in Osdorballa.
So I need a book and not like, sorry, I just want to recap what that is. So you can publicly mint without one of these, like, what exactly is the mint process for this? And then what do those holders get?
So Nick, if you own a Writer's Room NFT, you know, for us, that's obviously delivering value back to the Writer's Room NFT, which is our genesis. We're not making any more of them. Super important. Those are going to be valuable for all of the content that we create moving forward. So everyone who owns one of those voted on everything that happened in the book, as well as was able to license, you know, theirs or one of their partners, you know, Apes or Mutants, to the book. So all of those people get to claim a book for free. They also get a spot on the write list to purchase another. at a discount to the Dutch auction. So phase one of this public sale, or phase one of this drop, is going to be a public sale with a pretty small amount. There's going to be about 2,300 NFTs. It's a public Dutch auction starting at 0.8, going down to 0.2. From there, we move to the whitelist phase, which is made up of writer's room holders who get an additional purchase, Apes and Mutants who are licensed to the book. There's about 4,000 of them. They also get a purchase, as well as a couple communities that are close to us, like G-Money's Admit One, as well as winners of like various puzzles that we did. And then the very final phase is the free claim for the writers. So it's a three-phase process. The first phase, you know, obviously will last as long as the supplies last. The second is a 48-hour like flat, you know, window for you to mint, you know, during, to avoid, you know, crazy gas. And then the third one is the free claim, and it's about 7 days. And then to Vijay's point, once that finishes, you have all of these books on the market. That's where the game theory and the excitement really begins. So there will be a period in which, you know, you can burn that book, and you can get an exchange in Azeroot. An Azeroot is our version of a mint pass, and it's a pretty sacred item within Azerbala. And eventually you will be able to either decide to age that Azeroot. The longer you age it, the stronger your Azurian will be when it is eventually born. Or you can take it to the monastery and offer it as a tribute to the gods, and you'll be blessed with an Azurian right away. So there's game theory on the, are you going to burn your book? Are you going to stake it? And then there's also game theory sort of once you go down that path further of, are you going to age your Azeroot, or are you going to redeem it for a PFP immediately? So our whole thing is just giving people choices, having fun, and kind of seeing where everything lands.
Yeah, pick your own journey. Like you said, story is deeply integrated into the project. Captain Kicks, you raised your hand. Do you have a question?
Yeah. First of all, big fan of y'all's project. I love what you're doing. I think you're in a very unique space. Also, congratulations on the big fundraising that your team recently did. Some really big names on that round, and I think validation of all of your hard work. And I'm sure they're betting on you, not just for, you know, your mint coming up, which I'm sure is going to be successful, but they're betting on you because you have some big long-term, you know, plans. I don't want you to have to, you know, spill the beans on anything too significant, but I'm just curious, like when you look on a multi-year horizon, like what kind of like technology and Web3, you know, synergies are you all going to try to kind of capture with like content on the blockchain? Cause that's kind of what I look at your business as, right? Like is content on the blockchain. And I'm sure there's just all sorts of things you can do with, you know, multiple authors contributing to a book that's like forever on the blockchain. There's a million things you can do. I'm just curious, you know, if you can share anything about that longer term vision.
Yeah, absolutely. We're a team that has a really diverse skill set, where we've got, you know, a screenwriter like Safa mentioned, and Emily Dell, all the way through to, you know, product management, design, and engineering. And the first thing that we brought to market when Jenkins the Valet launched his writer's room was a token gated platform where holders of the Jenkins the Valet writer's room NFT could connect their wallet at members.jenkinsthevalet.com to contribute to the story. So they could vote on questions that Neil had asked them about world building at the yacht club, genre defining questions, plot defining questions. They could also license their characters and build out or license their NFT avatars, and then turn those avatars into characters that Neil ended up like using in the writing. And that, I don't know if folks saw like our Where's Jenkins asset yesterday, but 930, you know, Bored Apes and Mutant Apes were created sort of in like a Where's Waldo game. And so for us, like the writer's room is this place where communities can engage with like projects that they really love. And it blurs the line between like a community member and a creator. And today, the folks who use the writer's room are our own community interacting with our own works. And that is like entirely our focus right now. But we believe that like content, especially like made better on the blockchain and through Web3, is community engaging, like first and foremost. You do it with your community rather than for them. And that doesn't, like, you can't do that effectively if you're only working on Discord and Twitter. Like every day we run into something new where we're like, wow, we could make this a lot more fun or a lot more engaging, or we could solve like a new use case if we built it ourselves. And so the writer's room platform, I think for us, is something that we're super excited about because it's an opportunity for communities to like really get like a lot deeper into what it means to engage with like a project that they love.
Well, I want to get a little bit deeper here. I see Micah has his hand raised. We're just going to go long on this. This is your last chance, though, to retweet the tweet that's pinned to the top and have and follow Azerbala to have a chance to win one of the two NFTs we're giving away, you know, Bored and Dangerous NFTs from the Jenkins the Valet ecosystem.
You got Jenkins, 5 seconds.
Yeah, Tally Labs, Jenkins the Valet, Azerbala are the sponsors of today's show. So retweet that tweet. I'm about to draw winners, so retweet it. Micah, you have a question for the squad?
Yeah. Just to like hammer home specifically like what we can purchase if we're interested in this stuff. I'm looking at these. So these writers' room NFTs, basically you get one free like of the books, and then you have the option to purchase more. Like, what is the?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So with a writers' room NFT, and there's no snapshot, by the way. Each writers' room NFT is entitled to a single free claim. As well as a single write list purchase, and we'll have checkers, so you'll be able to see if a given writer's room NFT has already been used to redeem that. So there's no snapshot taken; it can be purchased all the way up until the mint. And the cool thing about that writer's room NFT is obviously it'll get you this Bored and Dangerous, as well as the option to purchase one at a discount. But it'll also get you everything that we're doing moving forward, right? So it'll get you access to the audio experience, which is I know we touched on it a little bit, but it's in partnership with a group called Salt Audio, who's one of the leaders in fiction audio. So they've done everything from Hit Job, Pete Davidson, Edge of Sleep, Blackout with Rami Malek, like they're insane. And we're creating, incredible experience that is going to see Jenkins visiting other communities. Having that writer's room NFT will allow you to vote. It'll allow you to license. So, and that'll be the case for everything that we do moving forward. So, and obviously it'll get you this Bored and Dangerous. However, if you were just like, hey, I just want to get this book NFT. I don't really want a writer's room NFT. Then you would be able to just like participate, in the public sale. And one other note on the Bored and Dangerous NFT, which we didn't touch on, is one, the art is done by MBSJQ, who's incredible. The art's on the Jenkins Valet page if you want to take a look. And then the NFT also has a soundtrack that plays while the book rotates by Murda Beats, who's a Grammy-nominated producer who's worked with Drake, Nicki Minaj, Travis Scott, etc. So we've stacked a lot of incredible people, into this project. We're really excited. And then the last thing is that you'll be able to take that book to a custom, token gated e-reader. There's not like a ton of amazing token gated like reading experiences. So we decided to build our own. Well, you'll be able to interact with the book in a much greater way, see the characters, learn more about them, hover over them, et cetera.
And on the pricing for the write list one that you can purchase, is that at whatever the Dutch auction ends at?
It's a 25% discount to the final resting price. And we felt like that was a good way to obviously take care of our members, but also allow for like true price discovery to happen.
All right, cool. I mean, it's going to pain me because I minted 5 of your guys' NFTs way back in the day and flipped them for like a $40 gain. so the current floor price hurts a little bit, but I might have to get back in. We'll see.
Monster move, Mikey. You killed it. I just have one last question before we draw our winners. How did you guys land Neil? Because that's like that's a big fish to land. How did that come about?
See,
there's a long story and a short story.
let's do the short story.
Yeah, I think for sure working with CAA, but credit to G Money, one of our advisors has a relationship with Neil, connected us, and we hit it off immediately. Neil really gets it. He's been in the space for a long time, and the more you get to know Neil, the more you know that this is his bread and butter is a weird project like ours.
Awesome. Yeah, I was just getting the drum roll ready for this winner's draw. And as I turned the volume up for it, I heard like birds in my headphones. I was like, what the hell is that? And then I realized I still had the Azerbala.
You were hanging in Azerbala.
Exactly. I was like, wait a minute, what's going on here? So there you go. All right, ladies and gentlemen, if you retweeted the tweet and you followed Azerbala, you have a chance to win. As usual, we're going to try to get winners on stage. I got a few names here. So the
There's
first
no
name,
way that's happening.
We're gonna go the Moon Junkie. The Moon Junkie. I'm looking for you in the audience here. I'm not seeing you. DM me the Moon Junkie. It's gonna be first come, first serve. Next name is gonna be OX Brink. OX Brink. I do see you in the crowd. I'm inviting you to speak. Come on stage, OX Brink. Next one is DiamondShots.eth.
How many are we giving out?
Oh, we're giving away two. DiamondShots.eth is also in the crowd, which is pretty crazy.
Okay, so then just add them.
I didn't put the drum roll on repeat, and it went to Bongo Man as the next song. So that was what was going on there. Oh, we got Brink on stage. All right, so first of all, winner, winner, chicken dinner. Brink, you just won an NFT. How do you feel? He's on stage, but he doesn't know how to unmute, ladies and gentlemen.
He hates it so much. He's offended you even gave it to him.
Yeah, you're here, Brink. You got a Clonex. Now you got a board.
Oh, my God. He made it to the stage.
I wanted to buy into this for a while. So that's the good.
Well, now you don't.
Now you don't have to.
Don't buy it. No, I'm just kidding.
Welcome, Brink.
Awesome, Brink. Well, you're a man of few words. I'm going to just DM you now so that I don't forget. Winner, winner, chicken dinner. And we'll make sure to provide your name and your Ethereum wallet address to the squad. Back to drawing winners here. So we've invited the other ones to the stage. Let me just check my DMs. I'm sure they're flooded with people that didn't actually win. Okay, Diamond Shots hit me up and he said he's on his laptop changing to the phone. That's why he couldn't come on stage. That's your other winner. Winner, winner, chicken dinner. Funny thing, I drew 10 winners here. The 10th one is our very own node. Good thing we didn't get that far because people would have said that it was rigged. So I'm glad that node didn't win. But yeah, shout out to Jenkins the Valet, Tally Labs, Azure Bala. Gentlemen, thanks for coming on the show today. Any closing thoughts, anything you want to leave our audience with here?
I want to give a shout out to Thread Guy for making this whole thing happen. Thread Guy is the best director of vibes we could ask for, as well as shout out our whole team who really makes this thing run. We're honored to work with you guys every day.
Yeah, and thank you, PO and Nick and everybody for having us on.
Of course.
Is that Azure Bala?
Is this the sound of Azure Bala?
Nick's hanging out there.
Through the forest. I'm just hanging out here. It's like rainforest vibes out here, live on the scene.
Head over to the Edocon, Nick, at the prison camps. The sound's a little different there.
The prison camps. Okay, there's prison camps in Azerbaijan. That's incredible. Let's head over there real quick. Oh, my gosh.
Folks, go to check out, and anyone in the audience, you can go to azerbala.com. On desktop, sound on is our ultimate recommendation.
You can see
there are a lot of different places in Azerbaijan to check out.
Bro, throw the beats on, push the volume up.
Yo, this guy said he's gonna shank me. I gotta get the hell out of here.
Nick, you're not built for that life.
I'm going back to the rainforest where it's nice and friendly.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, shout out to our sponsors of today's show: Jenkins the Valet, Azerbaijan, Tally Labs. Check out the mint on Monday on the 11th, the public sale, Dutch auction style. If you already hold Jenkins the Valet Writer's Room, which you should, then you'll get access. And as usual, thanks for joining the show. We'll be back Monday morning. Thanks so much, guys. Catch you all next time. Here's a little car song for you for Jenkins the Valet.